This is the Tonecast from Porter Pickups, episode number 5. Today we'll be talking with Mitch Ingram from Emerson Custom. We'll cover a variety of topics, including more about his business, products, and some of his favorite non-Emerson gear. All right, so thanks again for listening to the Tonecast. Derek and I are here in the studio, and we got the opportunity to interview Mitch from Emerson Custom, so we'll go ahead and jump right to that interview. Well, thanks, Mitch. Thanks for joining us. Glad to have you here today. Welcome to the Tonecast. This is episode number 5, so we're glad to have you on. I know that we have kind of been industry friends for quite a while, so maybe start out, we could kind of talk about how we cross paths and just how, you know, we've worked together on a lot of projects, but maybe start out with how we've crossed paths.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, glad to be on the show. And so I think, man, we've probably known each other for a good almost 6 years, maybe.
I would say so.
I think we bumped into each other definitely on Facebook, but I think it was about the time that we were both selling to CE, or started selling. I think you started selling to them first, and then I contacted them, and we got on that, and that was a train wreck, to say the least, but thankful that we had each other to kind of consult each other on how to get out of that. Nothing against them. It's just very ignorant to set up distribution of your own product in your home country if you handle distribution yourself. So it was very pointless, and it was just a mess because you couldn't control who was buying your products at wholesale. So it just didn't work out, but glad we're past that. So I think that's how our paths crossed, was when we were both selling to CE.
Yeah, I think so too. And I remember throughout that, and just we started having conversations just about the industry and kind of where we were going as companies, and trying to, you know, kind of walk through some of the struggles and challenges of, you know, just new business and growing business and family and all that stuff. And so it's kind of been cool because in one sense, I feel like it's, it's not just like, hey, we buy your kits and we sell them on our site, or, you know, you recommend our pickups to some people at times. It's kind of more than that. And that's kind of one of the reasons that we wanted to have you on, just 'cause we like your product. We like, you know, the way that you do business and things like that. So we've got a few questions just kind of rolling through here. We'll probably interject a few comments here and there, I think. We don't want to follow the form all the time. So you ready? Okay. You ready for some questions?
Let's do it.
All right. So first question I had, and I think you may have told me this before, but where did the name Emerson come from? So it's obviously not your first or last name. So where's the name come from?
So it's actually my middle name. And I was named after my great-great-grandfather on my mom's side. His name was Emerson Wright Pomeroy. And he was born in the mid-1800s. And he fought in the Civil War. He moved all around in, like, southern Kansas, but, like, Emporia, stuff like that. He wasn't the first, he's like the patriarch of my mom's side. There was like maybe one or two generations before him that came over from Europe and settled in America. But he was like the first dude to like actually do anything significant enough where it, I think he had like 9 or 10 kids, and he was a really, I look up to him, cause he was a man of principle. He actually wrote an autobiography, when he was about like 80 or 90, and I've read some of it, and I've been to family reunions, and, I mean, he's basically like who everybody kind of, you know, finds their, he's the common denominator of my mom's side.
Nice.
And so just hearing stories of, you know, who he was, how he lived, is very inspiring. And I'm glad that my mom chose to, you know, name me after him, even though it's just my middle name. I think it's significant because, even, you know, when we went to name our kids, we tried to give them, some kind of significance in that tied into family, mostly their middle names, but, you know, still something cool like that. You know, I think names are significant, whether it's for a person or and less important for like an animal, but, also, you know, it's how we communicate, our words give meaning to things. And so it's cool to, you know, have some history behind that. So I named, the company Emerson, because I wanted it to still be a be tied to the family, but not be tied directly to my last name. A little bit of for separation reasons, you know, like I didn't want it to be, you know, like Mitch Ingram Company, you know, like, yeah, it's not
right.
Me. I want to pass it on to my son someday. And if we are lucky enough to have a girl, hopefully she'll want to be a part of it too. So,
yeah. Didn't you tell me that your dog or one of your dogs was named Emerson at one point?
No.
Okay. I thought so. Maybe I was wrong. Maybe I thought one of our conversations that you you named it after your dog. Maybe you're just joking or something like that. Maybe that's what it was.
That might have been it.
Okay. Yeah. That's awesome. No, that's good. I was thinking, you know, it's like, you know, a lot of guys will name their pets like something related to what they do for work, but you know, I don't have any pets, but maybe I'd name one like Bob or something like that, you know, for short for Bobbin or something like that, you know. Awesome. That's awesome. All right, so why don't you tell us a little bit about your company history, maybe when you got started, what year it was, and kind of how you got into the gear business and maybe why you got into the gear business.
Yeah, so started Emerson as just like a hobby in 2009. I always wanted to be involved in the gear industry, but I didn't really realize to what extent that'd be. I started playing guitar in fourth grade and was pretty involved with our local church and, you know, just your typical kind of music at church thing all through high school and early college. And, you know, it worked out pretty well, but I quickly realized that I wasn't cut out to work in the church and that I needed to still be involved in music, but not in the church, and just kind of do my own thing. Nothing against the church. I just not, it's not my thing, you know? Mm-hmm. So started out building parts casters, would kind of before parts casters were big. I mean, they were now they're like huge, you know, everybody and their dogs building parts casters. But did that for about 2.5 years. I think we built about maybe 30 guitars. They were pretty cool. I still had a full-time day job. We didn't have the money to invest and to do as many things in-house as I'd like. And so about probably 2011, I really realized that, there was this one guitar in particular I was working on, wiring it up. It would probably only take me about from, like, when I installed the pickups to, like, literally dropping in all the wiring. It would maybe take me 45 minutes to complete right now from start to finish. But it literally took me, like, 5.5 hours to wire up that guitar. Like, no lies, like, straight up 5 hours. And I was like burning stuff. It was just a mess. And so, I'm very OCD. So if I'm not good at something, like, it bothers me, especially if it's something that I need to be good at, for, you know, what I do. And so I really challenged myself to get better at wiring. Not only, I mean, you know, as with everything, speed comes with practice, doing it a lot. And so, I started kind of breaking it down on, you know, how to make things cleaner, how to make things better. Looking at the components we were using, the pots, the caps, the wire, blah, 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 you know, every little detail. And then just making it not only the wiring more efficient, but the assembly, which led to, a cleaner looking, you know, cavity of the guitar and, you know, ultimately it working better because, you know, you didn't solder on it 20,000 times. I built a couple pre-wired kits for a friend here in town. His name's Brandon Autry. He's an amazing guitar player. He's toured with a couple big names in the country, music realm, like Chase Rice and a few others. He is a artist for PRS and just an amazing player. I built him a couple harnesses for his guitars because I think he's thrown in pickups and he just wanted to swap out the controls. So I just built him some stuff with what at the time was, you know, better components that then came stock. You know, they're just from other vendors, nothing proprietary or unique to us. But, you know, I started realizing that when stuff's cleaner and you're using a better component than comes stock on the guitar, it does improve the feel and the sound of the guitar. You know, pickups, although they play a big role in the sound, so do pots and capacitors. There's a lot of people that say capacitors and pots are just a variable resistor or whatever. A capacitor is just a just a filter, but I kind of see it as, you know, with pickups you have oodles of different types of wire and a bunch of different kinds of magnets, and even though they may read the same, you know, certain spec that, you know, as the other one, when wound a certain way, even if it's the same amount of turns, you'll get a different response. And I kind of view pots and caps the same way. You know, certain things are made a little differently. You know, maybe the torque is a little, lower, so it's easier to turn. So maybe it has the same taper, but you're able to turn it faster. And so, the volume swell feels a little more natural, less jumpy because, you know, you're not having to fight your volume knob as much. So, in a nutshell, we transitioned quickly from, being focused on parts guitar, parts casters, to electronics, and that was pre-wire kits. We sold, I think, our first couple kits to a dealer in Canada. Then we got picked up by a dealer in Australia, and then I think it was like 2011, maybe. Yeah, that sounds about right. Upfront Guitars was our first U.S. dealer, and we still sell to them today. They're a great shop. Upfrontguitars.com. I think Brian, you started selling to them recently. Made them some Fallout pickups. It was cool. They picked up our pre-wired kits and they've been selling our stuff for over 5 years now, and they do a really good job with that. So that was kind of the start of our company. Before, like, I wouldn't really consider the parts casters a business. It was more of a hobby. We definitely weren't making any money. The pre-wired kits, I would say that's what transitioned us from a hobby to a business. We got real busy with that. And then in 2012, I started playing guitar at our church again. And when we got married, we moved to a new church closer to our house. And as with most, you know, smaller venues, you can't crank your amp super loud. And so, you know, you definitely need something to make your amp hit the sweet spot, but at a lower volume. So I started playing around circuits, and I'd never really messed with pedals before, but started messing around with stuff. And, you know, I'd bring something like each week, whether it be a pedal built by another company or, you know, just messing with stuff that we, you know, I'd came up with by myself. I brought one Sunday, and it was what became the M Drive. And it just worked. Like, the sound guy was like, dang, what'd you do? Like, this sounds really good. It's cutting through the mix really well. And so worship leader said the same thing. And yeah, it just kind of took off. We built, I was just like, all right, well, I'll see, you know, we'll take a shot. So I got like 50 enclosures powdered up by this local like industrial powder coat shop. Like, their main focus is like literally painting tomato cages.
Nice.
And so the kind of turquoise color that the M Drive is like kind of known for was just a color swab on their wall. And I, you know, since it was just, I was just making 50 pieces, and they were kind of jerks anyways, I knew they wouldn't order in something different for me. So I was like, hey, you got any of this? And I'm like, yeah. And so they made some for me. I drilled them in my garage, took the enclosure up there. They powdered them. Then I took them to this like engraving shop in downtown Tulsa, and they did a silk screen on them. And we sold out the 50 in like 3 weeks, which was huge, because, you know, that was a lot of pedals for us, especially in such a short time. We were sold out for like, I don't know, like 2 months, because I was like, what the heck? I don't know what to do. You know, I've never sold this many things this quickly. And so, yeah, that's kind of how Emerson went from a hobby to a business, was the pre-war kits, and then we came up with the M Drive, and that really took off, especially for a smaller company that never done any pedals before. That was 2012, so there was a lot fewer pedal companies back then. Now there's like hundreds and hundreds that have started since then, but that's kind of how we got our start. So I know that was a long answer, but
that's all good.
He actually answered a lot of the other questions we had as well. So it's great. At what point, cause now you're a lot of the components that you use in your pre-wired kits are things that you've kind of designed and stuff, right?
Yeah.
At what point did that become, was that pretty early on after you started getting serious about the pre-wired stuff, or?
Well, so I realized, I think it was like 2013, that if we were to grow, we weren't able to rely on middlemen for the majority of our stuff, because we were, in order to build enough kits, you know, we'd usually buy out our vendor and they'd be out
sure,
of stock.
Yeah.
And and so it wasn't really good for us, because we were paying basically, you know, I guess the retail price at a wholesale level, but we were buying in enough volume where we could, if we would have spent a little bit more money, we could go straight to the manufacturer. And so after a little bit, I was like, I started kind of looking into that, and I realized that I could probably buy like two cars with the amount of money it would take to go direct to the manufacturer. But I think Brian was actually one of the first people I talked to. I approached him and I was like, hey, I know we already do business together, but if I were to start, you know, kind of getting more heavily into parts, just loose parts, would you give me your business, you know, like your switches and your jacks and stuff like that? Because in order for us to build more pre-wire kits, we're going to need to order more parts, which hopefully we'll be able to go straight to the actual manufacturer and stuff through a middleman. So I think, yeah, I think definitely Brian was one of the first people to be like, yeah, I'll give you my business. And so that was really helpful. We realized that in order to grow, we had to control our supply chain, which meant that we couldn't rely on other people stocking our raw materials. And that we needed to go straight to the manufacturer so we could, you know, order in more quantity to solidify, you know, our inventory levels so that we could not only build more kits, but also kind of have a better idea of, you know, when stuff would be available, stuff like that. So it's kind of evolved over the last 3 years, but I'd say the parts and pre-wired kits are probably about like 80% of our business right now. Those two, we have like three segments. We have the pedals, parts, and pre-wired kits. And the parts and pre-wired kits are about 80% of our business. Okay. So those have grown exponentially, you know, in the past several years. And I would say that's partly actually a big reason why is, you know, we took that leap of faith and invested heavily. Like I could have bought a house easily with all the money we invested the last couple of years into not only just buying straight from the manufacturer, but we were actually, if we would have just ordered what we were, like the same spec, same quality, same tolerances from the manufacturer, we would have been able to get them cheaper than what we are, you know, ordering now. But we're like, you know, if we're going to do this, if it's going to have our name on it, it's going to be very good. And so, we started out with, the Emerson Pro pots that we, spec through CTS. And, a lot of people like them. You know, it's still a, a commodity item, and I say that as we sell them for $7.25 a piece at street price. So, you know, you can buy pots that are like literally $50 a piece, and they will do things that only they can do. But we wanted to make a better CTS slash alpha slash Bourne's pot at a reasonable price that had features of a more expensive pot. And then also, instead of just stating the tolerance like most people do, whether it's like plus or minus 30, plus or minus 20, or plus or minus 10, we actually hand test each and every pot that comes through our shop. So, I think that's a big, you know, selling point and a value added feature for our pots is that not only do we say they are, but we actually confirm that. We throw each and every pot on the multimeter to make sure it's within our spec. So like a 250K pot, we actually advertise them at plus or minus 8%. So that means you're going to get anywhere from 230 to 270K, but most all of the time when we're testing these, they're like super tight. So we advertise plus or minus 8, but a lot of the times they're very, very tight and a lot better than that. But that's just what we advertise so that we can under promise and over deliver.
That's great, yeah.
So yeah, we did the pots, and then we were using Russian, like new old stock Soviet era paper and oil capacitors.
Uh-huh.
And we were selling them to Stumac. That was kind of how we started working with them. And we didn't, you know, hide the fact that they were Soviet caps. You know, we stated that, and we put, you know, we just threw some heat shrink with our label over it. And, you know, we would get them in, and we'd clean them up, and we'd throw a label on them. And, you know, like that kind of, that era of that, those capacitors reminded me a lot of parts casters. You know, it was just processing things. It wasn't like we didn't design it. We were getting them from other people. We couldn't control the quality. You know, we'd get in batches that were completely like corroded. They'd have the leaves would be all rusted or have corrosion on them, and they're just gross. And so we'd have to scrape them off and clean them up. And I was just like, man, this is so dumb. Like, we were spending our lives cleaning up things that should probably just be in the trash. I mean, they're good. They are good, but these have been sitting in a warehouse, a damp warehouse, for like 30, 40 years. So it was frustrating because I was like, you know, there's really nothing unique about these. I always had the desire to, you know, make our own. And so we were growing, and slowly learned, like, realized that, okay, so Stumac is selling through this amount. We're using this amount for our pre-war kits, and then we're also selling this amount. Russia's not able to supply us with what we need based on our current usage. And so I got to looking around, and paper and oil capacitors are very, very expensive to make. There's only a couple companies in the U.S. that still make them. And they're companies that sell to the military. They use them in like fighter jets. They're built so well to withstand like very high altitudes, like almost like space-like altitudes. And so they're built very, very well. They're hermetically sealed. They have glass ends, so. Like they're sealed, nothing's getting in or out. And so we started working with some manufacturers, and I remember talking to one of them, and I think they did a lot of business with the government because they were wanting, at like 1,000 pieces, they were wanting to sell them to us for $500 for each piece.
Oh.
And I was just like, bro, I'm not building a fighter jet. Like, because they would ask, do you want the military item number or the civilian item number? And I would like request pricing on both of them, and they'd be the same. So, and it's the same exact item. They just literally stamp it, whatever. So I was like, all right.
That's amazing.
So I got samples from them, and then I contacted another place, and they were a lot cheaper or a lot more inexpensive, but it was still really, really high. And so, I was able to call them and just kind of tell them, you know, what's up and kind of what we were thinking about doing. And thankfully they took the time to listen, and we worked out a price that was still higher than I wanted it to be. But it was sustainable, and we were willing to make the investment. So we've been using and selling those for about 18 months now. They're made here in the U.S. to our exact specs. They're very, very nice. We model them after the Sprague Vitamin Qs. They're really, really nice. We're very proud of them. They sound great. They're built very, very well. And, you know, we think it just was one of the final pieces to our puzzle of putting together a better pre-wired kit. You know, you can buy capacitors for literally like 5 cents. And that's, there's nothing wrong with those, you know, but, when you have a $5,000 guitar, You know, if you're so focused on spending 5 cents, you know, and you're not concerned with how it responds, or, you know, kind of its piece to the puzzle, you know, and that $5,000 guitar, you know, the pickups might, you know, cost $400, you know, and then they're putting in like the cheapest pots and the cheapest caps they can find, you know, and it's just like, okay, you know, it doesn't make sense. And so, it's not that we're trying to, you know, charge a lot for a capacitor. That's not what we're about. It's providing people that want a high quality paper and oil capacitor at a reasonable price. And they are new production. So, you know, it's not like they've been sitting in a warehouse. You know, we make them, we have them made here in the US, and they sound really well, and they're going to last a very long time. So, I think I chased a rabbit there, but
yeah, no, that's good. I think a lot of people, you know, we get this question when we sell your pre-wired kits or put them in our loaded pickguards. A lot of people are asking, you know, hey, what's the difference in this versus what I can go get, you know, from another place. And so, I think you explained it really well. And, you know, the things that we've noticed is, you know, stuff like the taper, stuff like, you know, the way the tone knob works, and it doesn't just go straight to mud when you're rolling on the cap. Everything kind of just, like you mentioned, kind of works together pretty well. So I thought we would take a little bit of a look maybe into where you're going as a company. If you can tell us maybe anything that's coming up or some new things that you're working on that people might get excited about.
Yeah, so we got several new pedals in the works. We've been focusing so heavily on our parts and pre-wired kits the last 2.5 years that we really haven't had time to really do anything else but that. But we started developing a new pedal about 18 months ago, and we're in the final stages of testing. It's been a very long and drawn out process, but I'm very glad that we've waited to do anything with it till now. We've probably spent a good, I don't know, $10,000 just in testing and messing around stuff and breaking stuff and wasting money on parts that we didn't need. So that's, you know, as with everything, it costs money, but we're really excited about it. We're hoping to start shipping them around Christmas of this year. I'm not really gonna, we're kind of waiting to get back our final prototype and do some final testing before we start taking pre-orders for it. But hopefully we should at least do some teasing around Black Friday for that.
Nice. Okay. So that's something people can look forward to kind of coming up here. If they're listening to this, you know, exactly when it comes out, you know, obviously Black Friday is coming up soon, but yeah, just, you know, encourage you guys to check out Emerson's site and social media, things like that. Derek, you got a couple more questions for Mitch?
Yeah, for someone maybe looking to get into this business, looking to get into the gear community, are there things that you would recommend to someone, maybe looking back on, you know, how you've come up through this, or just things that you think, you know, would be important in that area?
Yeah, I think now even more so, the economy, and I'm not trying to be all doom and gloom, but I'd say this has probably been our toughest year so far. I've been doing this full time for a little over about 3.5 years now. You know, we built a new shop. We broke ground on it last December, and we finished it up and moved in June of this year. So it's 5 times the size of our last one, but with that came like 5 times the overhead. Mm-hmm. And I'd recommend don't quit your day job. keep working at your day job, learn how to be diligent, and having a boss and being responsible and handling someone else's business before you try and venture out on your own. Ownership is a huge, taking ownership in what you do is a huge thing. And if you've never had, I guess, previous experience of screwing something up and having to pay for it, whether out of your pocket or doing it over again and not getting paid for it, you know, you don't really feel the burden or the weight of that until you've had that experience. And I'd say working at most corporations, you know, like Walmart or a restaurant, you know, like if you make that pizza wrong, they're not really going to take it out of your check. They might joke about it, but I don't think they can really do that. Same with Walmart. Like if you, you know, put something in the wrong space, you know, they're not going to be like, hey, go clock out and fix that, you know. So it doesn't really affect your paycheck. But when you start working for yourself, you know, if you order too much of something and you're sitting on a bunch of product that you don't need or can't sell quick enough, you're looking at not being able to take a paycheck. And I think a lot of people don't realize how much money it takes for a small business to be profitable, even to just simply break even. You know, it's the cost of living, although it's fairly low in Oklahoma, you know, we got healthcare that we have to, that not, well, we do have to provide it, but we should take care of our employees and we should pay them well so that they want to work here. Just as with any competitive environment, you know, you want to take care of your people, you want to treat them well so that they will take ownership in their work and they'll do a good job, they won't cut corners. You know, that costs money to pay someone, to pay people well, to stay, you know, to stay focused, to stay, you know, passionate about what they do. You know, if you don't treat your people right, morale is going to drop and you're going to have a really high turnover. So it takes a lot of money to be in this industry. It's, I think we've talked about this a lot, Ryan. What we make is not, is a straight up luxury. We make things that people don't need. People don't need pickups. They don't need pedals. They don't need electronic parts. They may, you know, want it to fix something or to make their guitar sound better. But at the end of the day, they can't eat our products. They can't be kept warm by our products. They can't put our products in the bank or store it in a safe that holds value. Let's face it, like, our products do not, or gear products in general, do not increase in value. If anything, they, you know, they, decrease, they depreciate. And so, you know, with that, there's a realization of, you know, what we do is, well, I know that you feel the same way and you are, you know, in the same mind as us, is, you know, we do this because we love making things better. We want to be a positive influence in the gear community. We want to make products that people can be proud of, that are priced fairly, and that are going to do what we say they're going to do. You know, it's very easy to claim that if you put in this set of pickups, you're going to sound like John Mayer, you know. If you put in these pots, you know, you're going to whatever. Or this capacitor will make you sound like Jimmy Page. Like, all of that is BS. Like, it's, there's so many different pieces to the puzzle. You know, the only thing we can do is build a product with integrity, to advertise it with honesty, and not lie. I mean, that's the biggest thing. There's too many people in this industry that are deceptive and misleading. And I used to get in trouble all the time by my mom. You know, she'd be like, "Did you lie?" I'd be like, "No. Are you telling truth, or are you withholding anything?" You know, and so it's kind of one of those deals that you can not necessarily lie about something, but if you are deceptive, it's in a sense lying. You know, it's causing people to buy your product based on false information. And when you do that, you know, it, your integrity goes out the window, and it's hard to trust people that play on people's emotional responses, that either, you know, try and sell them on, well, so-and-so is using this, so if you get it, you'll sound like them, or blah, 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 blah. We've seen that a lot. And it's very easy to see the appeal of that. And, you know, you see these companies do that, and they sell the product, but they don't stick around, or they run into issues where, you know, they might have some people to, you know, that aren't happy with them. And so this business is, if you're wanting to make a lot of money, look for a different industry. don't think that you're going to make it big in the music industry. You know, it's just one of those things that if you're wanting to get into this industry, I would think twice and probably look elsewhere. Not trying to discourage people, but it's, you know, we've invested like literally our life savings into this company and into what we do. So to do something that's unique and worthwhile and worth bringing to market is very, very hard. There's a lot of companies, and there's even some bigger companies that are making incredible products, like Tom Anderson, like John Sir, like Paul Reed Smith. They're all very well-known names, and they make an incredible product. And I would say that their products are priced very fairly. You can get them at, you know, most you can get them at local shops that carry high-end gear, and they're not crazy expensive for the quality that you get. Like, you could go in and you could pay $3,000 and get a Tom Anderson or John Sir or a PRS, and that guitar could be, you know, whatever you wanted it to be, and it would play great, it would sound great, you wouldn't need to do anything to it. And so we're really in a, like, kind of a golden age for the music products industry. There's a lot of specialized people doing really good things, you know, like we're doing electronics, and we do pedals as well. You know, Porter does pickups. So I think we've entered this age where if you stick at it long enough, if you focus on it, if you're passionate about it, if your talent's there, if you're willing to take care of the customer and stick around long enough and not take a paycheck for, you know, a long time, you can make something of yourself. Yeah, I mean, the market's super crowded, so it's kind of one of those things. It's really hard to reinvent the wheel these days.
For sure.
I'm going to be done with that subject.
No, that's fine. We got one more question for you, and that's actually a non-Emerson question, if that's okay.
Yeah.
So it's so you can't talk about any of your stuff, even if it's in your personal gear, but maybe talk about one or two guitars that you really have that you really like. That, you know, you're talking about kind of just like, you know, being inspired by really nice gear and things like that. And so maybe mention you one or two pieces of gear that you have that aren't Emerson that you really love.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I got like, I don't know, like 10 guitars hanging in my office. and I really like them. And I put them in my office because I didn't want to put them in like the showroom because I didn't want other people to touch them. But,
don't touch so my guitars.
Yeah, don't touch my guitars. Don't even look at them. No, I really got on a PRS kick last year. I went and visited the factory, and just to see the amount of detail and passion and pride that those people take in their work, it was very inspiring. I went in June of last year. I was in kind of a weird spot where we weren't super busy, and I was a little bit burnt out because I'd been working really hard and just in kind of a frustrating little season. And so I was like, I talked to my wife and I was like, hey, you mind if I get away for a couple days? And so I flew to Maryland, stayed there for like 4 days. I hung out at the factory for like 3 of those days. And up until that time, I'd only owned one of their SE guitars. So they're Korean made models. It's not made in Maryland, but it was still really well. And I put some of the Porter Smooth Clears in that guitar, I think. And those are really nice. That's what we test all of our pedals through.
Nice.
But so yeah, I toured the factory and I was just like, man, like these people get it, you know, like they're making a great product. And so after I left, I sold a couple Fenders and I bought a PRS Custom 22. And that kind of started my obsession with them. I was able to meet Paul and some of the private stock guys and the PTC guys. And it was just really inspiring to see that, you know, I mean, Paul's been doing it for over 30 years. And I would say it's not till maybe the last 5 to 10 years that they've really become a widely accepted go-to brand. And that just goes to show people that it literally takes a very long time to establish yourself in this market, because there's the status quo of you know, how it used to be done, how it's done now, and how it should be. And there's, you know, you got to find that balance. And so, yeah, I'd say I got a couple U.S. made PRSs that I can't decide between. I got like a DGT, a Custom 22, and a single cut 245 that I really like. So, yeah, right. I'd say it's a toss up between those.
All right. So if the shop was on fire and you had to rescue one of those, you gotta make a decision here. Which one would it be?
All right. So I got this one that is the most expensive guitar I own. I could have bought like a really nice used car for that much. It's a single cut 245. It has an all rosewood neck and it's sick. Nice. So, you know, I gotta save the rainforest. So I would save that one.
Nice. Okay. Well, I'm glad that you answered that with confidence, because, you know, for me, it's like that. I've got an Anderson that, you know, if it was, you know, the shop was on fire, it would be that one versus all the other ones. So I would even step on Derek to save that guitar.
You would definitely leave me in the shop.
Yeah.
Over
the
Anderson.
For sure. So.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yep. Well,
we sell to a lot of great builders, you know, like Veritas. We sell to Veritas. We sell to Novo, Saul Cole, Relish Guitars. I know I'm forgetting a bunch, but forgive me. So we sell to a ton of people that I really look up to, and I've been fans of their work for a very long time. So eventually I'd like to expand our collection, but
yeah,
I'm kind of broke because of the new shop. So, you know, that if you were to ask me that question a couple of years, it might be a toss up even more so. So
it's great. Well, man, it's been great catching up with you. Really quick, where can people find out more about you? Social media, website, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, probably the best way would be emersoncustom.com on our website. You can find all of our products and then also all the links to our social media. You can also find us, hopefully at your local dealer. If they don't carry us, ask for us and, you know, complain. And when they say they don't hear us, say, what's your problem? You know, stuff like that.
Exactly.
That's perfect. Well, thanks so much, man. We really enjoyed getting to hear from you and talk with you.
For sure. Appreciate you guys taking the time to talk with us.
All right. So glad to have Mitch on the show for Tonecast number 5. We also wanted to mention that we do sell all the Emerson products through the site. We do have some of them available through the cart buttons, but we're a full line dealer of anything that they sell. So if you're looking to get some pickups or just some Emerson products, we can get those for you for sure. You can contact us if you don't see what you need on there. That's, you know, including loose parts and the pots and caps and switches and everything like that. So it's a great compliment to your Porter pickups purchase is to add that Emerson stuff in there.
Just a reminder to anybody listening, if you'd like to subscribe to the show, you can just go online to iTunes and search Porter Pickups. You should be able to find us there and subscribe. Also, don't forget to check out the community tab at porterpickups.com. You can click on this Tonecast or any other Tonecast and see some extras that we've got there. Today, we'll definitely link some links to Emerson Custom there. Thanks so much for your support and questions. Feel free to always be reaching out to us through our website, through Facebook, anywhere else you'd like to get some questions. We'd love to keep the conversation going. On our next show, we're going to be talking about our wide range pickups, focusing on the design development process. We'll also probably feature some audio clips from them as well. So be sure to stay tuned for that one. See you guys later.